Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today is the 6th of July, and we hope everybody had a wonderful July 4th / Independence Day celebration, and we are back in the saddle here on this Monday morning because the world doesn't stop spinning just because America partied for a weekend. Good morning, Ed Vitagliano.
Good morning. Celebration
continues. Fred Jackson.
Good morning to you. I did not get the memo. For those watching.
Oh, for the light blue?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
The light blue.
It's a blue Monday.
It's a light blue Monday. Fred.
My shirt.
It's not dark blue.
A lot of thought goes into my shirts that I pull out to the closet because I never do. Rarely. It's usually Allison, my wife.
Your wife still lays your clothes out for you?
Is there a problem?
I didn't know that. At some point,
it's a give and take marriage. Okay.
You're supposed to learn what goes with what.
She gives me a shirt most mornings, lays it out, so picks it out.
You know, they still might sell granimals, Tim. You remember where all you had to do is match the animals on the label?
Oh, is that
remember
what it was?
It was for kids.
I'm capable of picking out my own shirts. It isn't like I can't do it. It's just.
Listen, I was always very impressed with you because you used to iron. You used to do the ironing in your marriage, right?
Absolutely.
That was impressive.
For about 10 to 15 years there,
yep.
When the kids were at home, I was missing.
That's impressive.
I was an ironing machine. Had that ironing board going.
Yeah.
Used the little Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe Cardinals baseball.
Yeah.
Depending on what time of the year it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did my share. Carried my weight. And I can show you how to press some blue jeans. I'll show you some. You do ironing at all?
No.
Not at all?
No.
Never?
I'd rather be completely wrinkled.
What was your contributions in your marriage while the kids were at home?
I do the finances.
Oh, okay.
I make the bed every morning.
Okay.
I do the outside, the yard work.
Okay.
I wash dishes and I do a little cooking.
That's a pretty good list right there.
I help organize, do some cleaning.
Yeah.
I like doing cleaning around the house.
Fred, Ed, can you contend with Ed's list of domestic accomplishments?
There? Yeah, finances. That's my department.
That's your department.
And the outside work. Although, if I'm away, my wife doesn't have any problem using the lawnmower.
Let's stop right there, Tim. Do you do the finances and the outside work?
There's so much stuff we need to cover on this show today, Ed. I really don't have time to get into that. We'll review it at another day.
Okay, that's good.
We're taking a sharp turn.
I do know how to go through an ATM machine. So if that's what you're asking me, can I do the finances? The answer would be yes.
Oh, dear.
All right, so... it is July the 6th, and in our nation's capital over the weekend, we had a big, big, big celebration. It was huge.
Huge.
It was huge. I watched much of the speech by President Trump, which was an excellent speech, and he honored some World War II veterans that are still around today. And told some other stories about heroes of our country's military.
Uh-huh.
And so that was, and then the fireworks display.
Which I hear was incredible.
Well, I think it was the largest display of fireworks in the history of the world. Okay, and
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. it went on for like 45 minutes.
Wow.
And you kept waiting for it to end, and it didn't. And it was extraordinary to watch on television. Whoever organized that needs a Nobel Peace Prize or something. I don't need to give them something, or a Denny's or coupon for two for one Grand Slam breakfast or something. They need something because that was a undertaking unlike anything I've ever seen in terms of organizing the fireworks display. So if you didn't see it live like I did, because it aired really late. And what happened was the weather in Washington D.C. postponed the celebration.
Couple of hours, yeah.
Yeah, and President Trump's speech, and then the subsequent fireworks display.
Did they use any drones during the fireworks?
I didn't see any, but you mean in terms of making...
I've seen some videos of...
They did. I didn't see them.
Just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
What they can do with drones now create displays.
Yeah, now what you can do, I'm sure, is go on Google or wherever search engine you use, type in... fireworks display.
That's what I just
Washington,
did.
D.C.
I said D.C. fireworks display. Okay. And you can go to YouTube, and it's 40 minutes. You can watch the whole thing.
I've never seen a 40-minute display of fireworks. And this was all over. It looked like it was all over the mall, really. They had boats out in the Potomac River, it appeared, from what I could tell. So it was really something to behold. But, you know, to sit, you don't get 250...
No.
You know, this is the 250th anniversary of our country.
Says one of these choices here on YouTube says 2,500 drones.
Wow.
Fourth of July.
There's your answer, Fred.
Wow.
But you see that? That's just...
Wow, that's fun. That is phenomenal. Yeah. Now, I'm just going to be honest. Yeah. I was in bed before any of this happened. I go to bed early, so I didn't... this is amazing what I'm watching.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it on at lunchtime. I'm going to go to my office and put it on full screen.
It was, and you got the reflecting pool. You had the World War II memorial. You had, I'm talking about the lights reflecting off of it. It was really something to behold. And to be there personally, man, the sounds would have been incredible. Did you get a chance to see it?
I did not. I saw the locals here, which was pretty good, too. But it was only about 15 minutes here.
So were you in bed, too?
Listen,
I don't mean to pass judgment, and I don't mean to sound harsh, but you guys are sleeping your life away.
we get up really early. I get up really early, and the first emails I see come from...
Me?
Yeah.
They were delivered at midnight?
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm the first to read your emails at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
Everyone makes choices, Tim.
We do, and I choose
to. Because you and Allison are night owls.
We are.
You guys go to bed late.
It's I don't know if it's natural for most couples to do the same thing. Either you go to bed early or night owls or somewhere in between. But, we've always been night owls. I can get by on 5.5-6 hours sleep and be fine.
Susie and I are split.
Okay. Well, she stays up late?
I'm early to bed, early to rise.
Okay.
But she's been a night owl for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But we have a little bit from the speech.
We're all different, So I don't think that's...
That's not bad. It's not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing. What do we got, Fred?
We got a little bit from Trump's speech that you've been talking about. Mr. Adam, it's cut number one.
250 years old, we may be the oldest constitutional republic on earth, but our country is just getting started because the best is yet to come. This is only the dawn of the golden age of America, and on this 250th 4th of July, we declare, just as they did 2.5 centuries ago, that for our country and for our children and for the cause of liberty, we are going to take our country to new levels, to levels not reached. We're going to make it bigger, better, stronger, and we're going to love it even more. And I just want to thank you, and the inconvenience of lightning can do that, but lightning will never stop you. And I want to thank everybody, and we love you all, and it's an honor to be your president. Thank you. God bless you all.
So there you have it. Has the speech also, which went on for some time, of course, honored our soldiers who have died bravely for the freedoms that we enjoy in this country. But also he took some time, and some of the mainstream media have criticized him because he did some politicking on the promoting the SAVE Act, which basically talks about providing evidence of citizenship before you vote. And he also talked a little bit about communism, cut number two.
Is a nation of winners, and today our country is winning again, and we're winning like never before. Communism is a loser, and it always will be. The communist system is the opposite of the American system, and the communist system has never worked.
Yeah, that was a little swipe at what's going on in the Democratic Party right now.
And it is going on in the Democratic Party. This is a big deal. One of the major political parties in this country is, I'm not even say turning farther left. The Democratic Party is being threatened by a movement that seeks to jettison the classical liberalism that has always marked the Democratic Party in opposition to conservatism. Those two are kind of the poles, the political poles, which have operated in America, and presidents and members of Congress and governors and state houses have drifted between those two poles to one extent or another. But beyond classical liberalism is a socialist movement that looks like it's linked to classical liberalism in terms of big government, but has gone beyond that and is pushing true socialism and is becoming a hate-filled movement with the Jews and Israel in particular as targets. And Christians should be aware that movements that hate the Jews ultimately wind up hating the church. So it's not an overstatement to say what you did. I think it's an actual thing we're watching unfold.
Well, speaking of Israel, we have breaking news that just went up on our website prior to me coming into the studio. Hamas leaders in Gaza this morning held a news conference, and they announced that they are dissolving their governing powers there in Gaza. Now, you will remember this was one of the key components of the so-called effort to end the conflict in Gaza, and the next step supposedly is to turn Gaza over to a UN-backed committee. Now, so that was the announcement from Hamas this morning. Now, immediately, Israel dismissed the announcement as irrelevant. They say the alleged resignation of the Hamas government, where all of the Hamas members stay in their positions, in their government positions, they're talking about there, is a spin that has no significance, an Israeli official said. So this is going to be a topic of conversation, I believe, at the NATO summit, which is opening later today and tomorrow in Turkey. And this morning, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel talked about the fact that he does not trust Turkey. He certainly does not trust the Turkish leader, Erdogan. Here's a little bit from what Benjamin Netanyahu had to say about that this morning, cut number seven.
Turkey is a great country, but it's governed by a man who calls openly for the annihilation of Israel. He occupies half of Cyprus, a NATO country. He's threatening Greece and other NATO countries, and he talks openly about conquering Jerusalem. Foreign minister, his number two, said that the Jewish state hasn't a place among humanity. Basically, it has to be wiped out. His interior minister, said he looks forward to be the governor of Jerusalem. Well, for a regime infected by the Muslim Brotherhood, an extreme movement that hates America and chants death to America from that side of the spectrum, I don't think they should be given F-35s or the engines for their fighter jets, because that'll upset the power balance in the Middle East, which is ultimately guaranteed by Israeli air superiority and also by, I think, by America's posture in the Middle East.
There you have it, Prime Minister Netanyahu. He had a lot to say about a lot of different things this morning.
Well, I share Netanyahu's beliefs about what's happening in Gaza. First of all, and I don't know, this UN-backed committee Is this a transitional form of government waiting for another election, or is this supposed to be a quasi-permanent peacekeeping thing?
I would go with your second option.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, the UN is extremely weak in these kinds of situations. The UN has very little authority. It does not have a military. And so I don't think that they are going to be able to hold power there. Whether Hamas by name takes over eventually in upcoming elections, whoever wins when they finally have some sort of elections, that is going to be a Islamist group. It may not be Hamas by name, but it'll be Hamas by character. The only way for Gaza to turn away from its violent past and its being used as an instrument of Iranian proxy terrorism is for a true government of Gaza to come to power that has the military capability of dealing with terrorists in its borders. So I absolutely agree with Prime Minister Netanyahu. This is not a long-term solution. And Turkey, I was looking up the year. I didn't know when the year was when Recep Erdogan turned the country of Turkey towards a more Islamist focus, but it was in 2010, mm-hmm. or the early 2010s. So for the last 16 years or so, that country has become a serious proponent of the Islamist vision of Islam taking over the world. And whatever threats they have against Israel are for real. That is a potent military force in Turkey. You got a feel for the nation of Israel. They got a lot of enemies around them.
Let me ask you that. By the way, folks, you're listening to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR, Tim, Ed, and Fred. We're talking about the fact that President Trump is he en route? Or
tonight he leaves aboard Air Force One, the new Air Force One for Turkey.
Okay, and the meeting in Turkey, is that Erdogan?
No, it's a NATO summit.
It's a NATO summit, okay.
Yeah.
President Trump said the only reason he was going, basically was for Erdogan. How do you pronounce
Erdogan.
It?
Erdogan.
Erdogan. That's what I read that he, at least his spokesperson, has said. So he must have a lot of respect for Erdogan, the president of Turkey. Is he a president that's a dictator? Or is he elected? Do you know?
He used to be prime minister, and then in the early 2010s, he became the president. I don't know a lot about there. They're supposed to be a republic. And after World War One, after the Ottoman Empire collapsed, was defeated in World War One, along with Germany and Austria-Hungary, they were forced to set up a republic. It's supposed to be a secular government, and it kind of held up to that until the early 2010s when Erdogan started moving them back toward a more Islamist perspective.
Now, Erdogan has threatened to go to war with Israel before.
Yes.
I mean, invade and everything like that. One other question about this. Do you guys know, can you explain to me why Erdogan would be so anti-Israel? Because they're not border states. They're like Iran again here.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, what would be the motivation there? Is it just Islam against Judaism?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's
yes,
it.
Very much so.
Okay.
And it's a complicated relationship. If you shape it like a triangle, you have Trump at the top. He likes Erdogan. He likes Israel and Netanyahu.
Yeah.
At the spokes of that triangle, so it's very tough for Trump to try to say I want to work with Erdogan because he believes Erdogan can help with regards to putting an end to the war with Iran. So he wants Erdogan as a partner in that, but at the same time, as you heard Netanyahu, he doesn't trust Erdogan as far as he could throw Erdogan.
Erdogan's been open against his disdain for Israel.
Absolutely. And it only increased after the Hamas massacre of Israeli citizens and Israel responded and what it's done in Gaza. And Hamas people have a welcome mat in Turkey. Erdogan is good friends with Hamas terrorist leaders.
Do you think President Trump should be stronger on this issue, or do you think he's in a situation where being president of the United States means you have to try to build relationships with everybody?
Well, you look at the agenda of President Trump, both in his first administration and this one. He believes that he can be a catalyst for what he believes can be true Middle East peace. That's why you had the Abraham Accords, bringing those countries like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, and others into a fold. And of course, during this conflict with Iran, Iran has attacked those countries under the Abrahamic Accord agreement. But at the same time, you've got Erdogan, who is friends with Hamas terrorists. He does not like Israel. He certainly, I think I'm safe in saying, has a hatred for Netanyahu. So that Trump is interested in a big Middle East kind of peace. He believes he can achieve that by bringing all these parties together. I'm highly doubtful that will happen.
And it complicates matters that Turkey is a member of NATO.
Yes.
Now, I don't think they're not a member of the European Union.
No.
But they're a member of NATO.
Yes.
So it is complicated because the U.S. in general has made it known that it will defend Israel.
Yes.
If attacked. Uh-huh. What happens if Turkey invades? Now you got two NATO members potentially going head-to-head, U.S. and Turkey.
Yeah. Did he mention that we were going to potentially sell fighter jets to Turkey?
A version of the fighter jets.
Okay.
I think it's, I'm not sure if it's the 15s or
16s. I don't know about selling fighter jets to a country that's threatened Israel. I think that would be foolish. Hopefully we won't do that.
I don't know it because it's that what I'm saying is it's a NATO member.
Uh-huh.
And we you know, a lot of our NATO members have their own versions of fighter jets, you know, France and the UK and Germany, all that kind of thing. Well, I don't know whether Turkey builds their own or whether they buy them from.
Well, anyway, we'll see what happens. It's a NATO meeting that's going to be
actually the big item on the agenda. Trump is going there to basically sign off once and for all. He's talked about this for a long time. He wants these not other NATO countries to pay a whole lot more into the pot. And so that's big on the agenda. K.T. McFarland, former Deputy National Security Advisor of the United States, was asked about this morning. The whole thrust of this summit is Trump is going to give the orders. We're not going to pay as much as we used to keep Europe safe. Cut number 8. Oh, I'm sorry. We're out of time. Maybe after the break.
We're out of time for the segment, out of time for the world. Right.
No.
I didn't know if you were
one day that's going to happen.
Yes.
We are out of time, folks. Okay. Well, I don't know. That'll be glorious.
For a second there, I wonder, is Fred prophesying? What is he doing here?
We're out of time, folks.
She knows something
hope
we
you're
don't
right
know.
With God.
Right. Here we go. All right. We'll take a short time out right here, and then when we get back, we'll play that.
Yeah.
We'll play that clip. And, you know, the United States of America is going up against Belgium.
Yes.
Yes.
In the World Cup today. And they're getting down to the round of 8 after today, I think.
Yeah, they're in the final they're going into the final 16 if the U.S. wins, I think,
okay.
Right?
Okay, we'll be back and talk more about our excellent knowledge of soccer.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for my turn, Don Wildman.
Some time ago in Brentwood, New York, Ms. Raymond Bates found her two youngest children, Deborah and Andrew, eating tranquilizer pills. Knowing the seriousness of this, she immediately asked their older brother, Timothy, if he had eaten any of the pills. He said that he had not. Ms. Bates rushed the children to the hospital, and Deborah, age 2, and Andrew, 4, both had their stomachs pumped. Timothy, denying that he had eaten any of the pills, did not have his stomach pumped. It was a crucial situation for Ms. Bates, for the pills that the children had eaten could have very easily killed them. It was of utmost importance that she be told the truth by her children. To have lied in a situation like that could have meant death for any of them. You know, there are many situations like that in life. Several times our physical life depends on whether or not we're willing to tell the truth, face the facts. Failure to do so will often mean death or serious injury. But deeper than this is the fact that we must be willing to tell the truth about our intangible being also. And here is where most of us are willing to try to get by on a half-truth, sometimes even a flat lie. We haven't been honest with ourselves here. We've told ourselves that everything is okay. It'll work out all right. So we've gone on ignoring our inner being, pretending that there will be a time to take care of that. We've even built up a conception that there's a great Santa Claus in the sky who will bring us all everything we need at the right time. We've lied to ourselves in telling ourselves that we have no obligation any higher than ourselves. We have fooled ourselves into thinking that if there is life after death, everybody will enjoy it equally and not just a pious few. When I break a bone and it needs setting, I don't dare fool myself into thinking that it'll be all right if I left it alone and everything will work out okay by itself. If I have cancer, I don't go around telling people that there's a great fairyland cancer doctor who will cure me. When I had my heart attack, I didn't ask for a knife that I could operate on myself. No. And all of these things, I told myself and I tell myself the truth, that I need help from beyond myself, from someone whose business it is to help in those situations. To do less in the spiritual realm would be equally as foolish. Don't make the mistake with your spiritual life that Timothy Bates made with his physical life. When Ms. Bates went to check on the children the next morning, Deborah and Andrew, who had their stomachs pumped, were fine. Timothy, age 8, was dead. Honesty is the best policy in all matters.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all He has done. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. Philippians 4, 6 through 7.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed and Fred. Fred, you were going to play a clip before the break. What is that? What are we about to hear?
This is KT McFarland. She's the former Deputy National Security Advisor of the United States. She was asked this morning in an interview, what are Trump's priorities heading into this NATO summit in Turkey? And she says there's basically two things. Cut eight.
He wants two things. He wants the NATO allies to step up with their defense investment, you know, to commit to spend more money on their national security and to commit to make things in Europe to increase their defense industrial base. The second thing he's going to want is them to agree that he was right on Iran and that the Iran situation, the Iran war is coming to a close. Oil prices are down. Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. And I don't think he's going to get the second one at all. he may get lip service to the first. Because even if the Europeans say, okay, we're now going to spend 5% of our GNP on defense, they don't have a defense industrial base. It's going to take them a decade to do that. And the Europeans blame President Trump for the Iran war. I don't see the European leaders telling President Trump the Iran war was good, the Iran war was successful. On the contrary, I think they're going to tell President Trump, Israel is terrible. We think Israel's the aggressor. You launched an illegal war against Iran. So I don't think this is going to be a happy meeting for anybody.
And that doesn't go over well with President Trump.
Nope.
You know, he will probably publicly take them to task. I just see the President
take
Trump
who to task
NATO leaders. I think that we're going to be moving in the years to come. I don't know if it goes beyond President Trump when he's finished, but I think we're going to be moving, continue to distance ourselves from NATO, maybe not fully, but I think he's right that NATO has lived off our umbrella, defensive umbrella. They should have been anteing up a lot more, a lot sooner. A lot of them are run by leftists, these countries.
All right. Again, you're listening to Today's Issues. Back to Israel for just a moment. The Times of Israel says that U.S. President Donald Trump on Saturday said he and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who we heard from earlier, quote, get along very good, end quote. And the Israeli premier, quote, knows who the boss is, end quote, in a brief phone interview with Axios. So President Trump owns Benjamin Netanyahu, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of surprised he says that out loud. Like, he's saying Benjamin Netanyahu, he knows I'm his boss.
Who said this?
Trump.
Yeah.
Oh, Trump said that?
You shocked? Trump says stuff like that.
No, that's true. And that's why I said, yeah, just slipping back to the NATO thing, I think he's going to have pretty critical things to say if KT McFarland's right.
But I don't think he should say that. Mm. It's demeaning and to Benjamin Netanyahu to say he knows I'm his boss.
Yeah. Netanyahu was asked about the relationship with Trump in this interview this morning on Fox and Friends. This is what he had to say, cut number 5.
We see eye to eye just about everything. And sometimes, as happens among the best of allies, and we are the best of allies, there can be differences of opinion. We usually speak about it in open conversation. You can imagine the president has his way of expressing things, and so do I. But we are, we're allies. We're your model ally. And right. We respect the United States of America. And if you come to Israel, it is the one nation here in this region that is not only a democracy, but a democracy in which the overwhelming majority of the people unabashedly support the United States of America. So my relationship with the president is fine, and we have a way of ironing out our differences as allies who respect each other.
I would say this. I understand what President Trump is saying about the relationship he has with Israel, that America, for the most part, calls the shots. But I don't think he's right about that. I think Netanyahu will do whatever the president wants him to do if he believes it helps Israel. I think Netanyahu strongly is determined to protect his nation. And if he has to contradict President Trump, I think he would do that.
Yeah.
And, if President Trump said, no, you can't, they were attacked by Hezbollah, and we saw this. We saw the president get very angry at Netanyahu for continuing to batter Hezbollah in Lebanon. But Netanyahu and Israel are going to do what they believe is right for their own defense.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Next story, Fred.
All right. As we sit here this morning, guys, there is a hearing that just opened up in the last 40 minutes or so in Provo, Utah. This is for the accused killer of Charlie Kirk, which occurred, that assassination, last September. Now, we've had hearings in the case. The lawyers for the accused, Robinson, he's 23 years old, Tyler Robinson, They've been trying to keep cameras out of the court. What they got out of that is cameras can't take a front-on shot of Tyler Robinson sitting at the defense desk, that sort of thing. So we've gone through all of that. Not many people think they're trying to delay this trial as long as possible because they think, you know, for the most part, they believe, most Americans believe that Tyler Robinson is guilty. The evidence that this is a preliminary hearing today, the evidence that's going to be presented is, most legal experts say, is, we'll put it this way, very strong against Robinson. And the fact that he turned himself in about a week after the assassination, the messages that he sent to his male lover, we'll call it, that, you know, he was going to go back and get the rifle that he left behind, all those sorts of things. That's the kind of evidence that's going to be presented. Now, today, Charlie Kirk's widow, Erica Kirk, is going to be in the courtroom for this. This is what she had to say leading into that, cut number 10.
I want there to always be full transparency, because what I don't want to have happen is for there not to be, and then I am relying then on social media and other news outlets to explain the narrative, rather than saying, hey, this is what happened. This is what you, here's all of the, it's just as hard, all of the facts on the table for you guys to see. And yep, you guys can see on full display what happened to my husband. And there is no ifs, ands, or buts or confusion as to who did it and why.
Let me ask you this. So the trial begins. Is that what you're saying?
Preliminary hearing today.
Okay. Is what's the fella's name who's the accused here?
Tyler Robinson.
Okay. They got video of him leaving the roof of the building where he used the gun to assassinate Charlie Kirk. Am I right?
They have video of a person.
Yes. Yeah. Video of a person.
They don't confirm that that's him?
Well, that's probably him. I'm looking at a summary of the case, and here the listed defense arguments. Robinson's attorneys have challenged the ballistics evidence, noting that federal analysis could not definitively link the bullet fragments to the recovered rifle. Now, it is also true that Robinson, the roommate, who whatever the relationship was between Robinson and this Luna Twiggs, Luna Twiggs provided a recorded statement alleging that Robinson was on it, was texting, and confessed to the shooting. So you've got the video that you're talking about. Is that Tyler Robinson coming down from the roof? Is that the weapon in hand that was used to kill Charlie Kirk? And is it really Robinson that confessed during a text message? That's where the
okay. A couple of things here. Did Robinson does he deny shooting Charlie Kirk?
He's pleaded not guilty so far.
What does that mean? He denies it then. I'm not guilty of shooting Charlie Kirk. That's a denial.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So if he denies it, and I wonder, does he have an alibi? You know, was he snow skiing and, you know, Montana, or what?
Well, an alibi certainly, and I'm going according to my vast knowledge of Law and Order and Blue Bloods episodes.
Okay, you go for it.
So he may, whether he has an alibi or not, the prosecution has to place him at the scene of the crime. That's going to be important. Now, it does mitigate against Tyler Robinson if he's claiming he didn't do it, and if they can't put him there, okay, that helps his case. Or if they can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt, that's Tyler Robinson crawling down off that roof.
Mm-hmm.
So does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm not totally ignorant of the American judicial process. I know how it works.
Right.
But sometimes you just wonder, when people make these pleas and they do these things, or they say these things, or they try to get out of, you know, plead not guilty or whatever like that. I'm just wondering, why did you do that in the first place? In other words, if he killed Charlie Kirk, right, which all the evidence so far that I've seen just says he's guilty of sin, okay, from the gun uh-huh. that his parents got from his grandfather and uh-huh. he coming down off the roof, it uh-huh. appears to be him. Uh-huh. I mean, is he saying that's not me? I mean, and all the text between his lover, as it were, and him, and he's, you know, all those things, you just go, why don't you just say, yeah, I killed him and I'm proud of it? Because it was a righteous cause. I guess I don't sometimes understand why people do things they do it and then they won't and they don't want to shy away from the reason that they did it, because that's almost a denial of their cause. You don't know? Does that make any sense?
It certainly does. If this was a cause for him rather than an individual vendetta, if he just couldn't stand Charlie Kirk and wanted to get rid of him, then he may want to get to carry it out and then get away with it. You see what I'm saying? And so he's not going to say anything. And the point I was making earlier is the prosecution has to prove that that's him.
Yes,
he doesn't have to prove that.
But I'm just saying, if you believe in your cause, you know, that a lot of people around the world, when they commit acts of violence like they did on 9/11, they say, yeah, we did it because America deserved it and we're proud of it. You know, that kind of thing from the terrorist organizations. I'm just saying, I just don't know why people would do something like this if he killed him and then try to say, I didn't kill him. Because yeah. he wanted to kill him for a political reason, it appears. But as you say, the judicial process will play out. That begins today?
Yeah, we're watching it. We have a screen up here from the courtroom right now.
If he did it, what I'm saying is if he did it, this guy, what's his name again?
Tyler Robinson.
Yeah, well, if he did it, he needs to just say, yeah, I shot the guy because he needed to be dead, and I'm willing to pay the consequences. Or, hey, I was in Wisconsin that day, you know, milking cows
yeah.
or something. It's like, kind of like doublespeak or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I don't know what was in his
maybe
mind.
Maybe they're saying maybe his defense lawyers are saying we're trying to save you from the electric chair.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
If the evidence overwhelming.
If you're guilty, you're going to fry.
If the evidence is that overwhelming, then that would certainly enter into it, I would guess, for his defense
attorneys.
He just
doesn't want to be executed.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah, I mean, he fear.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be executed, so I'll sit and
I think depending on how this preliminary hearing goes,
yeah.
and they say it's only going to be a couple of days, you may have a plea agreement coming out
yeah.
of this.
Yeah, which would be, so when you say I'm not guilty and then you plea down to being guilty, you were lying the first time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you say you're not guilty and then you plea guilty, you were trying to trick everybody, right?
I think that that's just, I don't think it's considered lying. I think you say we're entering a plea at this time of not guilty. And then they consider their options, and there's back and forth.
But they're guilty.
Well, if they're guilty,
if they confess to it, they're guilty.
Yeah, if you confess, if you plead guilty,
if you say I'm not guilty, and then you confess to in order to get a plea, you were lying the first time.
We're talking about someone who assassinated someone.
Well, I'm just saying, is that true, Mr. Pataglino?
I guess it's
all right.
It's true.
You're listening
yes,
to...
Yes, yeah. yes, okay. I said it. And I don't regret it.
You can't handle the truth.
It's true.
Okay. All right, Fred, what's your next story?
Well, while President Trump is in Turkey, he is going to be meeting with the Ukrainian leader, Volodymyr Zelensky. And the Ukraine... military has had some successes lately, in particular blowing up some oil refineries in Russia, so much so that the headline coming out in recent days there, Russia in meltdown, empty petrol pumps, battlefield humiliation, and warnings of an uprising as the net closes in on scrambling Putin. And then there was this headline, Russia's top banker pleads with Putin to stop the Ukraine war And he did that plea on state television. And he makes stark warnings about the country's economic crisis. So, is it possible that this war, what, four years now?
2022, February, right? Or was it January? I think it's February.
It's at least, just over 4 years. Is it possible it could be coming to an end? And the Ukrainians keep going, and they're using these drones, and these drones are delivering bombs to the refineries, basically not far from downtown Moscow.
I wonder what the betting odds would have been at the start of this war 4 years ago, that this war would still be going on 4 years.
I would have bet on Russia.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a betting man.
Yeah, but you would have probably bet on Russia within a couple of months.
Yeah.
At the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
The mighty Russian army. And we're not talking about a war where they have to go fight thousands of miles away. This was on their border, Russia's border. And yet, here we are 4 years later, and the Ukrainians, and I don't know where all they're getting their money and support for, but they are inflicting great pain on Putin and Russia, as Fred said, using drones. Listen, they've been in, they bombed the oil refineries in St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
They bombed deep inside Moscow and Russia. I mean, the things they're being able to carry out is causing turmoil in the country of Russia. The people are feeling it now beyond having their sons and their friends sent to the front line to go die. When you have an open call, an open criticism of Putin by just one of the top banker in Russia, and mm-hmm. he goes on national television to do it, that's when your banana pudding's poisoned. I mean, you better watch out. You better switch out with this guy, what he's eating. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and let me tell you, Russia, when it comes to assassinating people around the world, especially mostly in Europe, they've been pretty good at, you know, whether it's journalists or something like that. So, if I was Putin, I would be worried about my banana pudding or my borscht.
Except they've never been able to knock off Tom Cruise. Have you noticed this?
That is true.
Huh?
That's true.
Ethan Hunt. As much as they've tried, Ethan Hunt always escapes.
Listen, this is scary for us.
What's scary?
I'm talking about the switch in tactics, military tactics, to a heavy reliance on drones.
Uh-huh.
That's scary to me. I'm not just talking about our military overseas. I'm talking about attacks here on our own soil, because these are very cheap. Most of these drones, you can knock out. If you can knock out oil refineries in Russia, you can knock them out in the U.S. You can knock out power grids. You can attack hospitals. This is a scary phase of the, you know, kind of give and take that happens.
Redefined guerrilla warfare.
Yeah,
drones have. Anyway, we'll see. The pressure is building on Putin to the extent that it can build on a dictator who is surrounded by, you know, a wall and forts and security. But the people of Russia seem to be sick and tired of this. And you know what's a shame of it is, and I've been, you know, this war has kind of been on the sideline as far as international attention, because it just goes tit for tat on and on and on and on. But the destruction done in those two countries, in particular in Ukraine,
how do you recover from that?
You're talking about a decade or two.
Well, you know, you've also had people who have fled Ukraine in the early times, portions of the war.
Yeah.
They fled to Poland and other places. They've been living there for 4 years.
Yeah.
3 years. They've been living somewhere else. Is there a home to go back to? Are there job, my town? Are they still standing? It's terrible.
I got to tell you, remember early on, Zelensky and his team, I remember, were like doing videos on like the first few days of when Russia began to attack them. And he was like, this may be our last video to record. Yeah. Remember that?
Right.
And here they are 4 years later, and they're still continuing to battle the mighty Russian army. and withstand them capturing their whole country.
The article that I think that you sent out overnight, Tim, about this story, it said that Ukraine might get Crimea back. That was one of the things that Russia wanted to hold on to. And so who knows where this winds up?
Would you say Russia has turned out to be weak based on what their reputation was prior? I'm talking about militarily prior to this. I mean, good night. You would think they could roll into Ukraine on their border and take that in a few weeks if they were really as powerful and mighty as we thought that they were.
I don't know. And well, once this is over, we'll get a better look inside. I don't know what Europe and NATO was doing to help Ukraine in this in terms of weapons. But I thought that Russia would – I thought it would be a cakewalk. I'm just going to be honest.
I think everybody did.
Yeah. I just thought would do it in a few weeks or a couple of months.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred, and yes, we are experts on international affairs. Yeah, I think we're demonstrating.
We're just three guys shooting the breeze.
Shooting the breeze. But,
you know, at Hardee's, talking about the issues of the day.
Go ahead, Fred.
All right, coming soon to a $100 bill near you.
Okay. I want to see some $100 bills. I haven't seen those in a while.
All right. The commander-in-chief posted on Truth Social Friday that the new bill would feature his signature, marking the first time a sitting U.S. president's signature would appear on the currency, along with his Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent's signature. We're going to be over in the lower left-hand corner.
Is this like a commemorative $100 bill or something, or is this the changing over? Is this going to become standard printing?
I'm unclear on that front. If it's just going to be for this year, then those dollar bills or $100 bills are going to be worth a lot of money someday.
Yeah.
But
it's the first time in our country's history we've ever had a sitting president's signature on a $100 bill. True?
Yes. That's it.
Okay. Ed?
What?
Your thoughts on this? Is this just we need to move on to the next story?
No, this is Trump. This what Trump does. You know, he tried to change the name of the Kennedy Center. Changed the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. This is kind of pretty typical Trump stuff. And I don't have a problem with it. I might see about investing in a few $100 bills if you guys are saying these are going to become rare.
Yeah.
I have a $2 bill sitting in my drawer.
It is a first. When are you going to cash that in?
I don't know. As soon as those things go up in value.
You can buy $2 bills. I haven't seen a $2 bill in a long time. They're just not hardly
in. They're still in circulation. I was just kidding. They're not going to be worth anything.
They don't make many of them, do they?
I don't. $2 bills? Probably not. People don't trust them. Even today, if you pull out a $2 bill, especially someone under 20, who's 20, 25, who's a cashier, they've never seen them. A lot of young people, they didn't know these things were a thing for a while. I'll bet you couldn't pass it off.
Is it Thomas Jefferson's picture? Who's on there? I want to say it's Thomas Jefferson on the $2 bill. That'd be a good trivia question.
Do you want me to answer it, or you?
See if Trump's picture's on there.
President Thomas Jefferson, fist bump for you.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome. All right. Well, I bet you that the President Trump's signature on the $100 bill, I bet those things will be a collector's item. Mm-hmm. Unless
they're going to be in circulation
from now on for the next 2 years. All right, we will take a short time out right here. We'll be back. Steve Paisley-Jordahl will join us momentarily. We're going to take a time out for news, and then we shall return.
This year, America celebrates its 250th birthday. 2.5 centuries of courage, innovation, faith, and freedom. But what will the next 250 years hold? The next generation could hold the next Billy Graham, the next Rosa Parks, the next Ronald Reagan, the next child whose life will impact generations. But first, they must be given the chance to live. Every day, Preborn Network clinics help mothers facing unexpected pregnancies discover hope through a free ultrasound. When a mother sees her baby and hears that tiny heartbeat, her baby is twice as likely to be given the gift of life. What story will God write through America's next generation? In honor of America's 250th anniversary, we're asking friends to consider a special gift of $250. Your gift can help provide nearly 9 life-saving ultrasounds. Dial hashtag 250 and say the keyword baby. That's hashtag 250 baby. Or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Every gift is tax deductible.